Curtis administration.
All right, so I'll
get into that if you want.
Yeah. So I have with me David.
Hello, my name is Richard David McPherson Barnes. I am a candidate here in Salt Lake City, Utah for Salt Lake City Council District 1, which is the northwest quadrant of the city and includes two National Guard bases, Army and Air Force, as well as Salt Lake International Airport, the Utah State Fair Park, and where they're forcing us to build a new prison out by the Great Salt Lake, which I consider the shake and bake zone. My degree is Bachelor of Science, Geology, Class of 85, University of Utah. I know if it's going to Florida, your problem is sinkholes with the limestone where it was water. They drained the water and houses collapse into holes where there's nothing but air.
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, when you're Richard,
yes,
it's nice to connect with you. And we are at WeCanAct.net, yes. WeCanAct event. It's a conservative political speech platform, and people have come in from around the country, I'd imagine, to Salt Lake City this weekend.
And we're very glad to have you. We're very excited to have everyone come. Tourism's our number one industry, a lot like Florida, parts of Montana. We appreciate everybody who comes to visit us.
One of the things that caught my eye here was, as you mentioned, the area that your seat covers. Of course, the Salt Lake City International Airport, a prison. Yes. What is that? What type of prison is this that's being built?
It would be all kinds of different levels. Probably a good state-of-the-art prison. Many years ago, I ran for Utah State Senate, and I was privileged to take a tour of the Utah State Penitentiary, our present one, which is out at what we call the Point of the Mountain on the Utah-Salt Lake County border. You drive over a small hill, and there it is. I found that of a population of about 2,200, all but 124 of the prisoners had figured out how to stay out of their cells pretty much their entire waking hours. They made the traditional license plates. Nearly all the furniture used in government buildings in the state of Utah is produced there. Tropical fish for Walmart, they raise those. Help people with genealogy, they're getting degrees. And a few people that just can't get along with anybody end up spending nearly all of their time in a cell for their protection, as well as the protection of the rest of the prison population, including the guards. So it'd probably be something similar there, but the people in Salt Lake City just don't want it out there. They're putting it right by the Great Salt Lake, which imagine a frying pan. The people live where the tall mountains meet the flat Great Salt Lake. That's where most of us live, because the lake goes up, the lake goes down, not necessarily in that order. So it's just not a good place to build much of anything. I call it the shake and bake zone because of what they call ground liquefaction. When there's an earthquake, water mixes with the sand and mud. Buildings tend to sink into it, and that breaks gas lines, and so you bake. So I call it shake and bake. So I think it should be strictly with the owners taking full responsibility and including insurance for any damage done by that. And with the mosquito population out there alone, with West Nile virus, I'd consider it cruel and unusual punishment to put anybody out there.
Is this a state prison or a federal prison?
Or it's a county? State prison.
State prison, okay.
Yeah, we also have county jails, and the city has a jail too. Unfortunately, too much crime, and so people are put in, and then they're right back out because they have to make room for somebody else, which is pretty pathetic.
So, Richard, what's prompted you to run for city council in Salt Lake City?
I love freedom. I love America. And I love our state capitol building, the People's House, and what it stands for. The idea that you and I can run for public office, change things, talk to our legislators, although unless you're in the legislature, you don't have a vote other than helping elect somebody that you believe is like, thinks like you do. During the Black Lives Matter riots of May of
Salt Lake
2020.
City.
Yes, they burned police cars downtown, smashed a lot of windows, and they did a lot of damage there. And then they were heading up to the, I got word over conservative talk radio that they were headed up to the Utah State Capitol building.
A mob.
Yes. I believe it was about 2,000 people that had been doing the stuff downtown were up there. They had been unruly on the staircase, the south staircase, granite stairs. It's a beautiful Capitol building. It's like one of the number one tourist destinations in the state of Utah. Beautiful marble interior and everything. Because of the COVID, it was closed. I think that was a lot of the problem was teenagers had been in lockdown for over 2 months at that point, and they were told, oh, you can't go to concerts, you can't do anything fun, but you can go out and riot. And the news media had actually told them when and where to go to be doing the riots, which was...
They were promoting a violent... Riot is a violent word, isn't it?
Yeah. They were,
it's not a protest. This isn't a peaceful protest. A riot implies violence.
I'll say they were inviting people to come and protest there, which, knowing full well that there was violence going on mixed with it. So I said, I just can't stand by and allow this. So I emptied my pockets, so I had nothing but my driver's license and a little bit of cash. And found that they didn't even have enough highway patrol officers to make a perimeter around the staircase with the main entrance. I stood next, so I just measured off another 8 feet and stood there, recruited four other people. We had enough to make a loose line there, and we stood, tried to be silent. The officers were under orders to don't say anything, because we knew darn well the only reason they were there was to draw out and either an attack and either injure or murder police officers. That was how the day was. Every politician with any sense, I believe, was in hiding at that time. They weren't anywhere to be found, and I don't blame them. But I just couldn't live with myself if I didn't at least try. So I went and stood. We stood for 2 hours. They hurled every insult in the book at us, but we were also able to talk to some of them. We got them to decide to put ourselves between the crowd and the police officers. And so, no, the police aren't here. They don't want to kill anybody. They don't want the paperwork. They're here to serve and protect. And so we changed the dialogue a little. And yes, they graffitied on the building, which others came and removed the graffiti within about a day there. But then we stood long enough. They sent in 300 National Guard troops, and it took 2 weeks of lockdown and nobody allowed on the grounds before I and all my friends or anybody could go and just enjoy a nice sunset from Capitol Hill and walk on the steps and enjoy it, like, which is what we want in Salt Lake. We love, our unofficial slogan is, the world is welcome here. We hosted the 2002 Olympics. We have the jazz. We, in Salt Lake City, we invite people from around the world to visit us. Over 20 million people through Salt Lake International Airport, 5 million at Temple Square. We're rebuilding the Salt Lake Temple, the LDS Church. So to protect that, protect our environment, as I have said earlier, I'm a geologist. Study the Earth. You can see pretty much the whole history of the planet right from Capitol Hill. And I could tell you about that if somebody wants to take the time.
So you as a vigilant citizen loving your surrounding, your city and your state, how many days were you basically defending your state capital from these rioters?
I was just there for 2 hours. I'm not sure if it was the state or which officials, but they declared a curfew at 8 o'clock that night. So at 7:30, by then, the protesters had decided there's nothing to see or do here, and they had backed off, which was the conclusion I wanted. I worked at right here at the Salt Palace Center. We used to have a big arena, so I spent 8 years, earned my way through college, working here as an usher and ticket attendant, you know, hosting hockey games, basketball, anybody that was anybody in the early 80s, all the rock concerts. If there wasn't blood on the floor, I considered that a good rock concert. Then I found myself enjoying White Snake and decided it was time to retire. But I had fun. I love the ice shows, Disney on Ice. My wife and I were big Disney fans. So say hello to your Disney friends.
So Richard, 2021 now, and we have what seems to be a divide, a very clear divide, politically speaking, in the country. How do you see that in your home state of Utah and in Salt Lake City? Do you see that divide apparent? And the other thing is, in generally, what is your basic assessment of the state of your nation?
Since January 20th, I have not been able to bring myself to fly Old Glory. I fly we support our blue, the black and white American flag with the blue stripe on it. That's what I fly. Also the pine tree one, an appeal to heaven. We are a nation under siege. Joe Biden, if he wants to do things, let him go through Congress. They control. They have either the tie vote or a majority in the House of Representatives. Why can't he do it the normal way instead of acting like a dictator with executive orders? We need oil to work. You don't just cut off the pipeline. You don't just cut off the people who have spent their livelihood in the overthrust belt and many other areas drilling for oil. Even to produce the windmills you want, you still need to lubricate them and make parts, many of them out of plastics and such. We just need to do things logically. Yes, we want to protect the environment, but the Keystone Pipeline would have been helpful to that, much more so than having oil tankers off our coast that can have accidents and spill and ruin our beaches. I can see why Florida does not allow oil drilling off their coast. The Atlantic coast and then the Gulf Coast as well. That needs to be protected.
So let me ask you this question. We have 8 years of George Bush Jr. and then 8 years of Obama, and the drastic difference in political style was very apparent. And then we had somebody that was very much different, further right, if you will, than Bush's. But Trump spoke about, Richard, he spoke about deep state and fake news. And I think, my platform, right, where I'm a kind of an independent citizen journalist in a sense. I'm not a journalist, but I'm just a voice. I'm an American, independent American voice. That would be because the fact that the mainstream news sources are so skewed.
Yeah.
But the question I have for you, Richard, is how do you define deep state?
Thank you.
What is What is deep state? What is that for you? What does that mean to you, deep state? What does that mean to you? What is that? What is that? What is he talking about? This is, you know, this is one of the wealthiest men in America, and he's sitting in the most powerful position. You even alluded to it. Yeah, Biden is abusing it with all these executive orders, which really should be out of his reach. They should be going through Congress to represent the people.
Right.
So it is the most powerful position on the in the land. And here was,
especially with his finger on nuclear weapons.
Sure. Here's Donald Trump talking about deep state. What does that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean to you? What does that mean to you?
I will be honest and upfront. Like, if I'm elected, that's what I will be. I don't really know what it means. I think most of us, you talk about the swamp. You have people that work for the government as a career. Their big desire is not to have anything weird happen on their watch so that they can retire, enjoy a decent pension, which they will have earned after 20, 30, 40 years with the government. Their interest is maintaining, I'll call it the bureaucracy, the setup, so that they can retire and enjoy a decent life at the end of it. Others might have more sinister motives. I'm really trying to understand our current administration. My problem is, I think I do understand what happened in Afghanistan. He pulled the troops out prematurely, leaving billions of dollars worth of weapons for an enemy that really hates America, the Taliban, and who has been systematically murdering Christians and many others since they took over, when during the Trump administration we had gone for well over a year with not one combat-related American casualty. I mean, just sometimes just having a few troops there can really make a lot of difference. So, I mean, how many police officers do we have in Salt Lake? Not nearly enough. But we need the laws simple, that the man on the street can understand, and as few as possible. You know, it should basically murder, robbery, theft, and deceit. Those would, I think that pretty much sums up most legitimate laws. It seems like you get people that want a bill with their name on it up in the legislature. I mean, do we really need another 500 or 600 new laws every time they meet for weird little things? I mean,
you speak of
I want to simplify the government so people understand it. Also back the blue so that our police officers are seen once again as part of and friends of we the people. We need to consider ourselves all part of the solution. If you see somebody littering, you take that paper and hand it back to him. I believe you dropped this, sir or ma'am. And everyone enjoy equal protection under the law.
You live in a state that was founded upon religious freedom. These settlers here coincide with basically the landing on the Plymouth Rock, the pilgrims. Do you think, you'd mentioned the Taliban and you'd mentioned Christian attacks on Christianity.
Yes.
Do you think that in this country today, religious freedom remains a threat? Do you think that religion is being attacked in any way? Do you think that's an important issue to be discussed nationally?
Every generation and every day we have to defend religious liberty as well as all other liberties. I was espoused in the Bill of Rights. You know, the Constitution is a nice form of government, but usually people think of the Bill of Rights. That's what makes us special in the United States. I'll give you a brief history of what happened. There was a young boy named Joseph Smith Jr., born in the mountains of Vermont. I visited his home. They had a cold winter. They moved out to upstate New York to a town called Palmyra on the Erie Canal. People were professing all kinds of religions. He decided to go out after reading James 1 and 5. He went out into the woods by himself, prayed, and I believe that God the Father and his Son Jesus Christ appeared to him personally in a vision, told him to join none of the churches, but more would be revealed. That tended to put him at odds with the ministers of the day in his area and sadly throughout the world. There were some who believed him, joined the church over in England. There were my ancestors heard the message. They decided to come over here, and after they in 1853, but they were living in a place called Nauvoo, Illinois. Wonderful place to visit. They've restored a lot of buildings and things. Anybody can get there, and if you're not LDS, want to drink wine, they even have their own winery there that's rather famous. And the Catholic Church has some things. There's a lot to see. It's a beautiful area, but because of differences, they were not allowed to live. They'd been kicked out of Missouri, Ohio, and now Illinois. The governor said you need to leave, and so we had to leave, went 1,000 miles as far away as we could get from anywhere that anybody wanted to live at the time. It was about 2 or 3 months journey by covered wagon or hand cart. So my ancestors came, covered wagon, set up a lot of industries in north of Salt Lake, mainly. John R. Barnes, he learned the technique of he would buy vegetables and produce, meat, whatever, from the local farmers and ranchers. Then he would give them script, good for anything at his store. So he made money, which then he sold the merchandise to merchants who sold it to the railroad and paid in gold. So by doing, which was really good, because one of his friends there, who happened to be Jewish, he was also a friend of the President of the United States in the late 1800s, because of polygamy, too many wives for one man, they threw a lot of us in jail, and we had no more rights than the Negro slaves before the Civil War. So statehood was as important to us as the Emancipation Proclamation was to the Negro slaves. So I'm happy to celebrate Juneteenth. I was one of the signers for the Martin Luther King birthday. So I'm very proud of that. It was in the early 80s. Sadly, it took us another 10 years to finally get it. Even Clarissa Scott King, his widow, she came and we rang the Liberty Bell together. She was hoping to convince the legislature, but they were a bit too stubborn, and so. But now we've got it. And I'm very proud of John R., who was a signer of the Utah State Constitution that, as early as 1896, guaranteed equal protection under the law for all citizens. Which, it turns out, so does the 14th Amendment after the Civil War. So if we'd just followed what was in the 14th Amendment, there should have been no need for women's right to vote, grant citizenship to American Indians. It was already here.
Richard, let's focus on, as we wind down here, your time in the city council for Salt Lake City. Yeah. As you are elected to that position,
I hope.
What are the items that you see most pressing that you want changed? How will you make your city a better place?
Just to continue to invite people to come visit us, enjoy our hotels, good meals, this wonderful convention center and others we have, as well as at different hotels and venues around the city. Just enjoy it. Make sure, keep it a place where you can feel safe to walk at night by yourself. That was what we were noted for. sadly, a lot of people have sent their homeless to have us try to take care of them, and that has become a major issue. But there's good ways you could take care of it. I mean, the price of one, you know, housing unit for a homeless person, you could buy a lot of tents and sleeping bags for that. Let them have a place to sleep in a tent. Maybe give them their own officers that they elect and their own rules within the camp, as long as they don't do damage to the surrounding community, so that they can have a chance to turn the tide a little, like we did at the state capitol. Get that job. You know, people are paying $1,200 to $1,500 a month for a two-bedroom apartment, and some of your older people, Social Security, my dad only gets $1,300 a month, and that was with two doctorate degrees. He does have other retirement, but it's a tough world out there. Just some kindness to one another. And that's what I'm hoping for, just to be an ambassador for my city, Salt Lake City, that where I was born and I love.
Richard, thank you very much for your time and joining Discussers of Truth. A final message for listeners, a final parting word. Maybe you have a website or how they can get a hold of you. A final word for listeners, please.
I wish I did. The only website I have is for my product I call Popcorn Rock. It's a crystal growth experiment. It's a unusual limestone.
Geology.
Yes.
You said that was your background?
Yeah, that's my background and my love. But, I mean, this is a great place for geology. If you want to contact me, 801-295-5762 it's my cell phone and text. God bless America. God bless Salt Lake City. Thank you for those of us who maintain freedom of speech with podcasts such as Mr. Trottier's here.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you.